This is Ann Fagan, who is Harold Kimball, Take 4, Side 2, for the National Council of Jewish Women, interviewing Julian Hask on December 20th, 1985, at his home. Before we complete our time with you, I think it's very important that you have a chance to talk about Mrs. Hask, whose life was an exemplary one, and who did things that were quite unusual for a woman of her time and her background.
Yes.
Would you like to talk about her?
Yes. Her maiden name was Eleanor, spelled E-L-I-N-O-R, Goldsmith, without the H. And the reason that there's no H is that her great-grandfather came over here from Holland in 1804 and used the Dutch spelling of Smith, S-M-I-T. Her education started in the Friendship School, then Dilworth Hall, which was associated with the college, which later became
Chatham, Pennsylvania College.
Yeah, it was called at that time the Pennsylvania College for Women. She graduated, I believe, in 1918.
What were her particular studies there, do you know?
I don't know. I do know that after graduating, she took a course in chemistry because that was my specialty. Of course, at Pitt. While she was going to Pitt, this was after the war had started, she was offered a fellowship at the Mellon Institute. Because her father needed her in his business, she gave that up.
What sort of work did she do in his business?
I don't
recall.
I was in France at the time, so I don't know. After the war, we became engaged before I went abroad, and after I came back, a few months after, we got married in June 1919. We had three children. David was born the following year, 1920. John and Barbara, each a few years later. She was one of the most wonderful mothers I've ever known. She devoted a great deal of her life to her children. And they now show the results of her example.
She also chose a career, did she not?
What?
She also chose a career in addition to being a mother.
That was later. At the time, I was doing away from Pittsburgh quite a bit, doing a lot of traveling in my business. And as a result, she had to devote more of her time to the children than would ordinarily have been the case. David, in his eulogy to his mother, mentions the fact that our backyard looked like a desert because all the children in the neighborhood were allowed to come and play whatever games they wanted to, whereas our neighbors all had flowers and bushes and so forth. We had none. When the children got older, she took them out in the country and taught them so much about nature, which they have never, and they've never lost their love for nature as a result. Birds were her favorite, but what they did was collect moths and butterflies. And the boys particularly had a collection of moths and butterflies that was good enough that it was accepted by the Carnegie Institute. She, of course, our social life was very complete. We had a lot of very close friends, belonged to a group that met regularly every week. She was a very good hostess, a good cook. In fact, I can't think of anything that Eleanor didn't do well.
Did she get involved in the communal life of the city?
Yes, she did. But after a number of years, one thing that I forgot to mention is that Barbara became a very good swimmer, and we used to take her out to the Y in Homestead, where there was a teacher who was trying to train swimmers for the Olympics, and Barbara was one of the children that he was training. This was when she was about 12 or 13 years old. But unfortunately, we had to leave Pittsburgh because our business closed. I was offered a job in Wheeling by the Marsh Stogie people. And we moved to Wheeling in 1940. And I still remember how wonderfully Eleanor managed on a very, very small income. Actually, I think it was around $3,000 a year, which today would be considered practically starving.
Right, poverty level, yes.
But she managed. After she'd been there a couple of years, she joined the Red Cross, and she drove a bus for the Junior League, not realizing that there were no Jews members of the Junior League. When we came back to Pittsburgh in 1944, this was after both of our boys went abroad in the Army, and after Barbara had graduated from the high school near where we lived. When we came back, she continued to drive for the Red Cross, the Junior League.
This was part of the war effort, was it? This bus?
No, the war was over by that time. Mm-hmm.
What?
But she was driving. She was driving social workers around the county, and she got tired of that, and she decided that she was going to become a social worker herself. So she went to Pitt, and after an argument, they accepted her.
She was how old at this time?
48 years old. Mm. They accepted her, and after 2 years, she got a Master's of Social Work degree. And then she got a job with a Veterans Hospital, and after it moved to its present location, originally it had been in Aspinwall, she became a supervisor of psychiatric social workers in the hospital.
So she began a professional career at age 50.
50, that's right.
Huh. What hospital was it?
Hmm?
Do you remember the name of the hospital? She became a supervisor
of the Veterans Hospital.
Oh, the Veterans Hospital, okay.
Yeah, and she continued that, but gave it up when our business closed, and I was more or less at loose end. She decided not to continue working while I was loafing.
Is that when you began to travel?
We actually could not travel at that time because her mother, in her 90s, was a hopeless invalid and had to be looked after. So that actually, we didn't start to travel until I was about 70 and Eleanor was 68, I think. But we did a lot of traveling after that. And the one thing she insisted on always was that she wanted to have some of the children with her. We took a trip to the coast and to Canada with two of Barbara's boys, Bill and Rick. We took them on a trip to Italy and Switzerland a few years later. And the year before Eleanor died, we took two younger boys on a trip to France.
Did you find it was particularly special to have young people with you in these travels?
It certainly is.
How did they enrich your experiences, do you think?
Well, among other things, we had to think about the history of these countries that we visited so that we could tell the boys more about them and about the people and the places. The trip to Italy, we had one experience that I may have mentioned before, I don't know. When we were in Pisa, driving towards the Leaning Tower, just before we got there, our grandson Rick said, "Stop the car," and he jumped out and he chased a black man down the street. And it was Bill Cosby. He asked him for his autograph.
No, you didn't tell us that story. That's lovely.
Altogether, it is a great feeling to have young people with you that you can share experiences with. And I think that the boys still remember with pleasure those trips. I'm sure they do.
As you think about your life and remember with pleasure or with wonder some of the things you've seen and the changes that have taken place, are there some that you'd like to comment on, some that really stand out in your mind, apart from the joy you've had with in your marriage and your family, events in the world perhaps, changes that you've seen?
Turn it off. Give me a chance to think.
Yes, you were saying, Julian, that you were remembering some of the learning experiences and the growing up of your children. Would you like to tell us the story about your wife?
Yes, the greatest thing I think that Eleanor devised for the boys particularly was what we call the orange business. We had a number of very close friends who lived in Squirrel Hill and Murdoch Farms, and they all agreed to buy oranges and grapefruit from our boys. So Eleanor and I would go down to the strip every Friday and bring back cases of oranges and grapefruit, and on Saturday the boys would load up their little cart and pull it around to our various friends. And after a while, they realized that the people they called on were very glad to see them, and it gave them a great deal of confidence, which young people don't always have in the relation with odors. And I feel that it was one of the great things that Eleanor thought of, because one of the greatest things, because they carried that feeling, that confidence, into their business lives later. They didn't have the lack of confidence that I had when I started, because I had never had any business experience in my entire life up to that point.
And it was too late to sell oranges.
Yes. Another thing that they did later was to sell Fuller brushes. That was Eleanor's idea too. And they not only got more confidence calling on strangers, green doorbells, and they made some money out of it too. Now, she was a great influence in their lives, and it was a great loss to all of us when she left us after we'd been married 54 years.
Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful record of married life.
Yeah. And as I said in my tribute to her, there'd never been any other woman in my life.
Mm-hmm. That's quite a tribute. Let's, while you're remembering great influences and wonderful things in your life, talk for a bit about other changes in your life, things that you look back on as either learning experiences or special events, part of your own learning and changing.
I'm trying to think of my experiences after I graduated from college. As I said, I'd had no business experience. I'd had experience as a chemist, not only at first at the Mellon Institute, then at the Republic Steel in Youngstown, then at a dye company in New Jersey, and then as an officer during the war, but no business experience whatever. And when I was in the stogie business, we had a man, a very close associate of my father-in-law's, who was our traveling representative, calling on wholesalers around the country. And after a number of years, he quit that for one reason or another. I don't remember the reason. And I was given that job. And I remember how fearful I was calling on people that I didn't know.
Yes.
And it took me quite a while to get over that feeling. After calling, just as in, like in music, you have to do it. You have to listen. You have to hear it. In business, you have to meet people and you have to get to know them. And after you do that for a year or two, all that trepidation leaves you.
As you traveled around the country in those years, were there places that made a particular impression or people that you recall from those years?
Well, the people that I met were my customers. And I had made some very good friends among those customers. In Cleveland, in Cincinnati, in Chicago, in Kansas City. People that seemed to be glad to see me when I came, and whom I was glad to see. And some of them became Some of them became social friends. We had one rather humorous experience. Our customer in Chicago was Catholic. I got to know him. He used to visit his home as well as his business when I was in Chicago. Then we got to be very close friends. Then I got to know a number of his employees. And one time, I got an idea to invite them all to come to Pittsburgh. And darned if they didn't come.
This was when, approximately? What year or what period? Can you... Would this be the 40s?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they came, and they came to our house on Inverness Street, and we had them for dinner. And Eleanor, not realizing they were Catholic, served meat instead of fish.
This was Friday, I take it.
It was Friday.
Yes.
And I still remember my friend turning to all his employees who were with us and saying, "Forget that you're Catholic today. Don't embarrass your hosts."
That was very gracious.
Yes, it was.
So that was certainly a learning experience, wasn't it?
Yes. And I think, I've talked about the All Saints.
Yes. Yes, you have indeed.
Well, that was a great experience too, getting to be very friendly with them, because they were outstanding people. What else you want to know?
Well, you've seen the world change so much during your lifetime.
Oh, yes.
You might want to comment on some of the changes that have been most impressive to you.
Well, one of the greatest changes is the city of Pittsburgh. Mm. Of course, I was born and raised as a little boy in Manchester on Sheffield Street. And when I look at those houses over there now, which probably were built maybe around the time of the Civil War, I don't know, they were quite old. But that's where the Jewish community lived at that time, the German Jewish community. And to see the change in the Jewish community way of living from those old houses to Murdoch Farms, for instance, later, to Squirrel Hill. It was quite a change. I think that not only the Jews live better, but they're accepted better in every way.
Other changes in the city that have impressed you, apart from the neighborhoods? How about the Renaissance, which was part of
It was an ugly city in the early 1900s. It became, Allegheny became part of Pittsburgh around 1906. I think that was the date. And Allegheny certainly was not beautiful. They've improved that. That has been a tremendous change over there. But when you think of what's going on in not only downtown, but in Oakland and all other parts of the city, the only part that I feel sorry about is East Liberty. Mm-hmm. That makes me sort of cry every time I go over there.
Why is that? Has it changed that much since the East
Liberty?
Don't
you know what
happened? Why don't you tell us?
Huh?
Why don't you tell us about some of the changes in that part of the city?
Well, there used to be some very fine stores all along Penn Avenue and on Highland. And when they got the bright idea of making making Penn Avenue, I forget the name of it, what you call it, but anyway.
That circle.
A mall.
When they, yeah, the mall idea. It ruined East Liberty. There are practically no good stores there left anymore at all.
And two, what about the neighborhood? Hasn't it gone downhill there? East Liberty as a neighborhood.
Well, no, I don't think so. No, when you get up towards Negley, that section is still pretty nice. I guess you'd call that East Liberty, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, it's just the business part of East Liberty that was really ruined. Mm. Ponds are out. There was another furniture store, Penn Island. I can't think of the name. That's gone. All the good stores are gone. Mm.
That's the only section you think, though, that has changed for the worse.
Yes, that's right.
What about changes in the country, as you've noted them through your own lifetime? Are there any of those that seem especially significant to you?
It's hard to talk about on the spur of the moment.
Yes.
But naturally, I've seen tremendous changes in every way. I know when we lived on the north side, my grandmother did her sewing with a kerosene lamp.
Mm.
We did have some electricity. We had telephones, such as they were. We had a record. We had a record player of some kind. But the way things have changed electronically is unbelievable. The one thing I know nothing about are computers. I wish I could. Somebody would explain how they work. But I know that some people that I know have computers in their homes. I don't know what they do with them, but they have them. But they really seem to have revolutionized everything. And they say now that with computers, people are going to be able to work in their own homes instead of offices. By the next century.
Have you been concerned about the changes in industry, both in our region and in the country?
Oh, yes. Well, what's happened to the Monongahela Valley is very sad. And I don't know that you can blame that on any one company or any one administration, but I think that the present administration has been a terrible blow to a great many industries due to the fact that Reagan won't allow taxes and has built up this, I don't know, trillions of dollars that we now owe, most of which I guess we owe to each other, but we owe a good bit to the other people in other countries. And the only worry is that someday they're going to ask for their money back.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that the dollar is so high now that our manufacturers aren't able to do business abroad the way they should be able to. And of course, course, it bothers me every time I see a Japanese car, and even my own family buying them. I don't like it at all. There's nothing you can do about it, and I suppose I haven't been 100% pure that way. I think I have a Japanese camera.
Are you aware, or would you like to say something about the fact that this is a historical week, the past week we're living through, where Reagan has supported Congress to the extent that we're going to have a big change in the tax situation?
Well, I think if it goes through and if something is passed that will